Welcome back, everyone. I'm Shannon Larratt, and you're listening to BME Radio. Today, we've got Thomas Brazza in the studio here with us, and we're going to be talking about surface piercing, reverse engineering aftercare, and all sorts of stuff. So if you are a piercing nerd, this is the show to listen to.
While you're listening to this, you can head on over to stainlessstudios.com to see a bit of his work. That's Stainless Studios, all one word, no dash in the middle anymore. Although if you've been reading BME for a while, you've seen his interviews and his piercings on BME lots of times before. Tom, among other things, is the piercer largely responsible for taking surface piercings into the functional mainstream with his surface bars, as well as having pioneered any number of other techniques and ideas that are taken for granted nowadays. Tom, let's start with surface bars before we get into your more recent ideas. Can you tell us what those are and what the reasoning behind them was?
Basically, it was designing the jewelry to fit the piercing. The way the body wants to heal everything, it wants to pull the jewelry right up against the skin where the scar tissue is anchored. Putting a curved barbell in doesn't help, because only when it's anchored, you've got a little tiny piece of skin actually holding the jewelry in at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at why those piercings did not work and designing a piece of jewelry that actually fit the way the body wanted to heal it, that was the most important part right there. You know, and then looking at what kind of care you're going to have to do for it, mm-hmm, because of the fluid buildup inside.
Right. So is a surface bar suited for all surface piercings, or are there some cases where you might use a different piece of jewelry?
Well, the problem with the surface bar is you can't have a generic item.
Mm-hmm.
It has to perfectly fit the area of skin to work well. If it doesn't fit, it doesn't work.
Right.
Because what you're trying to do is take all the pressure off of the healing tissue. So it can't push, it can't pull. So if the tissue is slightly curved, you need a slightly curved back.
Mm-hmm.
The better it fits, the better it's going to work.
So the surface bar that you use for a spinal piercing versus the one for a vertical bridge, they're going to be radically different pieces of jewelry.
Oh, exactly, because you're talking with two totally different areas of the body, two different shapes to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then even when you're dealing with the surface piercing, the area has to be very stable. That means the skin can't move around a lot. The distance between the holes can't change.
Mm-hmm. As well as shape of the jewelry, you've also experimented with different materials on the surface bars. You found that different materials work better than others?
In different areas of the body.
Really?
Yeah. Well, you have the worst blood flow, like, say, hands and arms and, say, lower leg,
mm-hmm,
right? Titanium works a lot better.
Why is that?
Well, around titanium, you get a lot less lymphing. So there's a lot less fluid buildup. Because you don't have a great blood flow to the area, you're not getting the nutrients in there. It's going to be slower healing. So you're trying to reduce the lymphing.
Mm-hmm.
While if you're doing a nape, it works fine in stainless. But to do a hand or a forearm, titanium works a lot better.
Does that cross over into regular piercing as well? The more problematic a piercing, the more likely it'll heal in titanium?
Well, it all depends on the area of the body, depends on if somebody's actually got an allergy to nickel or not.
Mm-hmm. How common is that?
Quite common, more than you actually think. Because a lot of the times, the sensitivity difference is where it touches your skin. I mean, your body always absorbs a certain amount of anything that touches it, mm-hmm, into itself. But your allergy may not be strong enough that, say, a watch causes a problem.
Right.
I mean, that's a general way to tell if somebody does have a stronger reaction. They, mm-hmm, can't wear a watch because the stainless backing will cause some rashes.
Now, when someone's had a piercing done with stainless and they have a very slight nickel allergy, how can they tell they have a nickel allergy rather than just a mild infection?
Well, most of the times there is no mild infection.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody thinks they have a mild infection, they're actually allergic to one of their soaps.
Right.
And that's because an infection stays. It doesn't come and go.
Mm-hmm.
If you get an infection, you actually have to do something to get rid of it. While if you're allergic to one of your soaps, or say it's just your shampoo, and it doesn't get into it every day,
mm-hmm,
right? You will notice a change, and it's oozy, it feels a little raw, it's itchy, then it goes away for a few days, and then it comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time when people think it's infected, it's actually an allergy. That is the way more common problem than actual infections.
Mm-hmm.
right? And the other thing, too, is with surface piercings, what sometimes happens, what looks like it's infected, it's actually festering.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the fluids that build up inside the wound can't come out as readily as they should.
They're sort of rotting away in
the
inside.
Right, they're trapping inside and rotting away.
Mm-hmm.
So you're it's almost like infection, but not from a bacteria. You're
what do you do
being
about
infected
that?
By yourself.
How do you get them out?
Change the jewelry, mainly. Helping change the jewelry and flush it out with some saline.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a good squirt through it, get some of the fluids out, and then change the jewelry just to help reduce the bioactivity in the area.
Change the jewelry to what?
Titanium.
Right. And you were saying as well, now there's a new alternative material that lets you keep the look of stainless but doesn't have the nickel problems.
You have the benefits of titanium.
What's that?
Well, the problem with even 316 LVM,
mm-hmm.
if you look at the way it's meant to be used, it's not as a permanent implant into the body. It's only been used as temporary implants.
Right. So, like, if you break your bones, just to hold them together during
the
healing.
Yeah, exactly. Because the problem is, even if you're not allergic to nickel and don't react to it, it still gets into your system. It's a carcinogen and a mutagen. So, no matter what, long-term in the body is never good with mm-hmm. anything that's got a high nickel content. Mm-hmm. But there's a brand new material coming out called Biodure 108, which legally is nickel-free.
Mm-hmm.
0.03% max nickel. It's actually been rated for full use in the body.
Right. So
the places where people would have traditionally used titanium, here's a stronger metal
mm-hmm.
that can start taking over some of those duties.
Mm-hmm. So you'll be switching over to this material and...
In a slow process.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few kinks to work out. It's a lot harder. It's harder to work.
Mm-hmm.
So finding like the right methods to manufacture with it.
Right.
But it has a greater corrosion resistance than LVM, greater strength.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a great superiority. The only thing is, being harder, it's not going to be as malleable.
So more like a spring-tempered steel.
Right. That's the only problem with some of the captives.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to... I think we're going to play some Massive Attack from Tom. And when we get back, we'll talk about some new aftercare ideas he's got that are developed from reverse engineering a piercing.
Way below my lips, and everything you got's hoi polloi like.
Okay, we're back. Now, I think normally when people come up with aftercare solutions, what they do is they experience a problem and they work out various ways of dealing with that problem. Now, if I'm expressing correctly what Tom is talking about with this reverse engineering of aftercare, you imagine a perfectly healed piercing in an ideal period of time, and you figure out how can you take the unpierced body and turn it into this healed, pierced state without any difficulties. So rather than dealing with problems, you're dealing with the lack of problems. You want to talk a bit about that, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I find, well, with aftercare, the biggest problem is everybody thinks that twice a day thing you do is your aftercare, when in all sense, what it actually is just a cleaning. What you're doing there is preventing the wound from festering, right? So the whole thing to aftercare is providing a very nice, healthy environment for the piercing to heal properly, which means no irritations, no allergic reactions. You're trying to take all the stress off the healing tissue as much as possible, because that way your body only concentrates just on the healing. It doesn't concentrate on all the irritation you're putting it through all day, right? And that, all the irritation does is just take away from the amount of energy your body can put into the healing. So it just slows the healing down. That piercing, like a navel, that should be healed, perfectly healed in 3 to 4 months, no matter who the person is. Take 6 months, 8 months, a year and a half, till it's fully healed because of the environment the person has put that piercing into.
So the body, to put it simply, in these 6 month healing periods, the body is spending, you know, half or more than half of its efforts in dealing with problems it shouldn't even have to ever deal with.
Exactly, just even a slight irritation.
And
85% of all the problems that walk in the door that I deal with is Dove, Ivory, Irish Spring, shampoos, laundry detergents, all those products.
So what do you recommend they use as a product?
Very mild soaps on the body as during the whole time that it's healing, right? Nothing that's going to really irritate. Dove and the strong moisturizer soaps create problems in that they over-moisturize the healing tissue. It's too moist. And as the jewelry gets moved around, it creates ulcers inside the healing tissue because it's just rubbing it raw.
Right.
Ivory is detergent. It's very harsh. It actually, for some people, half the population, I find, it's not bad. But you take the other half, it actually burns the healing tissue.
Mm-hmm.
Your healing tissue is 10 times more sensitive than your skin normally is. What you don't think is a problem to your skin is once it gets into the body.
Right.
Because your skin has all those layers of dead skin cells to protect you from something getting in, causing a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Things still do soak down into the bloodstream, but at a much less level.
Right. So dead skin is not just the body's way of getting rid of old material. It's also a suit of armor.
Exactly. It's protection. Because if you look at it, moist skin is mm-hmm. more permeable
and a piercing,
than dry skin.
A piercing opens up a channel right
exactly,
past all of that.
Exactly. And right in there. And mm-hmm. plus, if something's on the surface, it airs out and gets out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Once it's just stuck inside the piercing, it stays there.
Mm-hmm.
So the irritation level is going to be a lot greater. Plus, you open yourself to a greater sense of allergic reaction
mm-hmm.
to a body product.
Right.
And an allergic reaction to a body product, it perfectly mimics an infection.
Mm-hmm.
There's pain, but most of the times with an infection, you feel pressure.
Mm-hmm.
With this, you feel rawness. It feels like a pop blister
mm-hmm.
as the jewelry moves. There'll be swelling and redness because it's a histamine response.
Right.
And there'll be pus, mainly just a little white to slight yellow,
mm-hmm.
because your body is fighting something, but it's not a bacteria.
Your
body's fighting a chemical, so what your body's trying to do is actually flush the wound out. So you will see some ooze coming out of the piercing. But the other telltale sign is it itches.
Mm-hmm. Is mistaking an allergic reaction for an infection probably the most common mistake that people make?
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, infections are way more rare than people think they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because in reality, look at it. Infection can only happen one way. You have to place the contaminant into the piercing.
Right.
They don't happen on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You actually have to do something. You have to help that infection happen. So looking at it that way, infections are more rare than they actually seem to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, somebody who's sitting there playing with their piercing all day, yeah, they're at a very
sure.
high risk of infection.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, one of the other problems you see with aftercare is it's too harsh,
mm-hmm.
what people tell you to do. Your first line of defense against an infection is the bacteria that is natural to your skin. Where is your second line of defense? In your blood when it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
By reducing the natural flora of your skin,
mm-hmm.
you're actually increasing your risk of infection.
I guess you see that most commonly in tongue piercings when people douse themselves.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, your mouth is so adept at taking care of itself, it doesn't need that strong product in there to help. It actually wants something really mild. Because the bacteria in your mouth, say in a tongue piercing, it doesn't let the foreign bacteria actually take a hold of the surface.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps it floating in with your saliva where you still got antibacterial properties in there. So the whole purpose of rinsing is to get rid of the food bits, to get rid of any liquid coatings that you have in your mouth, plus any bacteria you put in your mouth just to lift it up and spit it out.
Mm-hmm.
So by not going really harsh, you're not affecting your mouth in a negative way. When you see that green-brown film on your tongue,
mm-hmm.
that's actually a bacterial imbalance. Now, if you take care of your tongue properly, you can drink beer with a fresh tongue piercing because you don't get that yeast infection because the bacteria in your mouth prevents that from happening.
Right.
When you're over-rinsing and something too harsh, you're reducing the bacteria level in your mouth, then of course a beer is going to cause you a yeast infection
mm-hmm.
because the yeast that's present in it.
Right.
And when you get that white paste on your mouth, that's thrush.
Mm-hmm.
And babies get that because they don't have the bacteria in their mouth to help fight it off.
Mm-hmm. Now, your aftercare sheet and your consent form actually solves a lot of these problems before they ever happen. You want to tell us how your aftercare sheet is different than what most people are using right now?
Well, a lot of it starts right before we do the piercing. We ask a lot of questions of the person. We need to know medical conditions, medications they're on, allergic skin, is their water supply provided by a well? Are they allergic to anesthetics in the case of Bactine, which contains an anesthetic?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Are you going on a vacation in the next little while? Are you expected to go in for surgery? We're trying to find out anything that could get in the way of healing the piercing.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about a few of those things.
Yeah.
Water provided by a well, why does that make a difference?
You're taking groundwater, which usually has bacteria in it,
mm-hmm.
putting it into your home. Some people only treat their drinking water and will keep their shower water the same as it comes out from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
All it takes is a farmer just north of you laying down a whole bunch of fertilizer getting into the water mm-hmm. supply to create a bacterial mm-hmm. growth.
And the going on vacation question is the same?
Well, I mean, a lot of areas you go to, you're going to have problems. I mean, if you're going to Mexico and your body is not used to the bacteria that is there, mm-hmm. I mean, look what happens when you drink it,
mm-hmm.
right? Same with getting something into a piercing that your body is not used to. Where you live, your body actually gets accustomed to the bacteria that it comes in contact with daily. Doesn't
right.
mean the bacteria is resident to your body, but it's resident to your environment. You actually become immune to it.
So if people are planning on going and lying on the beach for their spring break, right before the vacation is not when they should be getting pierced.
Exactly. Plus, also, when you're on vacation, do you want to be worrying about what you can and can't do?
Mm-hmm.
You want to have fun, come sure. back, get the piercing done. Then you can take the effort it's going to take
yeah.
to heal the piercing, because in your daily life, it's easy to control those situations.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're on vacation, I mean, I've known even people from here in Toronto go to England, stay there for a month, all their piercings infect.
Really?
Even if they're healed.
Is that because of the stress of traveling, or why is that?
The bacteria is so different. Now, a lot of times if they go to Europe, it's different. They don't have a problem. But because England is an island,
mm-hmm.
anytime you get an island, look at the difference biodiversity compared to something even very close to mm-hmm. it. Very different because of that isolation.
It's not that there's something wrong with England. It's just that it's very different from here.
It's very different from here. The bacteria is different. Even the bacteria from England, say, to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Because England is an island and has been isolated, the resident bacteria there is different than what you're used to here, but a lot of it is also the water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hit my mic stand with my beer. That as we drink more of it, that may happen more often. Now, I'll switch on to a little bit different topic. You mentioned, Tom, that that babies get thrush. One of the reasons you know this is that you started your piercing career, you know, as a kid, like most people, and you know, you're an adult now. You have a family of your own, and you still have a studio. What's that like, going from, you know, the sort of, you know, wild kid that has a studio into being a presumably responsible adult?
I just don't get out much.
Yeah. Well,
it's more time spent at home. That's the main difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still have my responsibilities at the studio, still take care of that, but instead of going out after work, I go home.
Mm-hmm. And that's been an adventure that's been more than worth it, I assume.
Oh, always, definitely. It's you don't know what it's like until you have it.
I'm sure.
Until it's there. You know, you can't experience it.
I'm sure.
Until it's there. No, nobody can warn you about it. Nobody can tell you this or that about it or what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
It's when it first happens, it's very surreal
and very scary, I'm sure.
Yes. And then you sort of settle in, and then you realize everything's okay, and mm-hmm. just life goes on.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, you're not unique in this. A lot of piercers are sort of coming of age now, and it's becoming a much, much more, you know, grown up field in general. You know, 5 years ago, every piercer out there had taught themselves, and now most of them have, you know, had the opportunity to apprentice. How do you think that's changing the industry, if at all?
Well, I think the benefit we've had is a lot, because, say, younger people have gotten into the industry, and people probably a bit more with, you know, better education background sometimes,
mm-hmm.
we've looked at things a lot differently. You know, we're the ones who want to learn. We don't just want to know what to do. We want to... Like, personally, I always want to know more about what I'm doing mm-hmm. than what I already know.
Mm-hmm.
I always want to be able to grow. Like, you know, even the case with the aftercare, we always, you know, we found our aftercare was fine dealing with the problems, and I thought, well, what can we do so that people don't have the problems? Let's keep progressing this to the point of where it's never going to be a perfect science, but we could get it a lot closer to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the less problems we see happening, the less people that are going to the doctors with problems and the hospitals with problems with any piercing or tattoo, the better it's going to look on our industry.
Right.
Because you see that we can do this and it can heal well without problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's always going to be better for mm-hmm. us to be in that situation. I mean, if all piercings looked really gross and oozy and, you know, took a really long time to heal, that really doesn't say anything for us.
Definitely, definitely. I think the industry is going to great lengths to.
But I think like the biggest problem the industry has had right now is, I think, too rapid a growth in the more extreme area.
Really? What do you mean by that?
Well, I think a lot. The problem is we've had people who have been able to do things. Mm-hmm. It's been highly publicized.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, all these people who know nothing about it are jumping on it, but they're not necessarily the people that would actually take the time to learn about it more and to know more about what they're doing. Right?
Well, let me
ask.
They're
just like, here's the procedure, I'm doing it, there you go.
Let me ask you then, as one of the people who's probably been copied then, how do you feel about that? You know, that your work, you know, which is you know, thought out, carefully planned, you know, and you know, the decisions are made conservatively. How do you feel when someone takes that as inspiration, you know, to do reckless things that really aren't very well thought out?
Well, I mean, it just speaks about the person.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Unfortunately, I mean, in this industry, there, you know, in any industry you're going to be in, there's going to be reckless people, whether it's surgeons, dentists, architects, engineers, mm-hmm. any industry you're going to be in.
Especially an industry that...
There's always going to be, you know, a percentage that just will see something and want to emulate it just to show that they've done it,
mm-hmm.
right? Without necessarily even taking the time to find out more about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... I was talking with, you know, a couple of people, and they were working in New York, and the guy and the owner of the studio was saying, I'll put a ring in your hand, you know?
Yeah.
And apparently the local, like, TV station sent some guy in a business suit in asking about getting it done, and then, boom, sent the cameras in right after he said he'll do it.
Oh, there's more to that story. I don't think we should get into that, or we'll have a lawsuit on our hands.
That's what I said. There's no names. But along the same lines, it's just...
Yeah.
You know, people jumping too far ahead, not really knowing what they're doing. Because even like I said about 316 LVM, you can't do a permanent implant under the skin with 316 LVM because it's not made for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's made for temporary.
It certainly hasn't stopped people from doing it, though.
Exactly. You know, and that's the thing. People not knowing about the materials they're using, right?
Or the
procedures.
316 LVM is a better material than some of the junk that people have put under their skin, you know?
But you know what? All stainless steel categorizes under surgical, no matter what grade it is.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody says that their jewelry is made from surgical stainless steel, it could be the same stuff your knives are made out of.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly.
There's no guarantee as to the quality of the metal when it's called surgical.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to play a little bit more Massive Attack. And when we get back, I want to ask Tom about his training of people. He's apprenticed probably certainly more people than anyone else in this town, and how that's changed over time. Okay, we're gonna get back at things over top of this song. Let it sort of play out at a low level underneath us for a while. Tom, you were mentioning a customer of yours that, or someone that you'd corresponded with online, that had recurring headaches but didn't have any actual piercing at the time.
No, they had an old piercing mm-hmm. that they'd taken out years ago.
Right. And they weren't really sure what was causing the headaches. What was the solution to that?
Well, her concern was it the old piercing actually causing the headaches?
Mm-hmm.
Because she never had the headaches before she got the piercing.
Right.
Okay? But the piercing wasn't there anymore. It was gone
this
for
was,
2 years.
This was an upper ear piercing.
Yeah, it was on Rekarts.
Right.
And she said there was like a bit of a bump there, like a scar tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So my response to her initially was, well, put your pinky on the scar tissue, press down a little bit, and do you feel a very strong pulse? And if yes, take some extra virgin olive oil and massage it in twice a day into the tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And that should help you.
Mm-hmm. And
3 weeks later, I got a response. Her headaches are completely gone. Not recurring anymore.
Is rubbing extra virgin olive oil the safe and easy way to reduce scar tissue?
Yes. It's in my opinion, it's far superior to just vitamin E oil.
Mm-hmm. And it's better than the aggressive methods of aspirin. And
oh, definitely. I mean, aspirin works good for oral
mm-hmm.
because about every 3 days you're replacing all the soft tissue inside your mouth, so you can't over-damage
mm-hmm.
anything in your mouth. You're just getting rid of the hard tissue and then the soft tissue grows back. So orally, it works great. But outside of the body, if you're burning it too much, you're just going to cause more problems.
Right.
What you're dealing with here is you've got the vitamin A and the vitamin E that are in the olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
And in the right amounts. You can't overdo it. The problem with vitamin E oil is if you leave it on, it actually turns your skin to mush. It actually causes more damage than good.
Almost like over-moisturizing?
Over-moisturizing mm-hmm. it, yes. Because with the vitamin E oil, you have to remember to rinse it off.
Mm-hmm.
But I consider the extra virgin olive oil to be a little bit more idiot-proof.
Right.
Because you don't have to rinse it off. You don't have to remember. You may be putting it on, then run out of the house and forget to rinse it off.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
It's better to even actually leave it on. And by massaging it into the soft tissue, what you're actually doing is with the vitamin A and the vitamin E, you're helping soften up the tissue that's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you soften and massage it, you're stimulating the growth of the small blood vessels back into the softer tissue. Now, like roots from a tree growing through concrete, it starts helping break it up.
Mm-hmm.
You're moving it around. You're breaking it up. You're helping soften it.
Right.
I've had people that have had a navel. It's really scarred up. It's really red in the tissue. Within a month, the redness already starts receding.
Mm-hmm.
And the tissue's getting better. And it's totally helped their piercing.
Does that work for keloid scarring as well?
Definitely.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. That's what it works for.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of keloids.
Not just regular old healed
right.
scars. All right. Now I want to get back to the training. I suppose it was probably a solid 4 years ago when you started offering a 2-week training course that a number of people took. Now, you've moved away from offering that. What are you offering now, and why did you move away from that?
Well, the biggest problem is how much can you learn in a short period of time,
mm-hmm.
right? You can learn what you need to know. I mean, like when I do the training, at least the one thing I really stress on people is understanding what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
because if you understand what's happening, right?
So you're not just giving them a set of 1, 2, 3, 4
no.
steps.
No, that never works well because everybody's body is so different.
Mm-hmm.
You can't use a formula. You have to understand what's going to happen to heal it best, what jewelry to put in, what positions to pierce it, where the blood vessels and the nerves are to not cause any problems. You know, so you have to reverse engineer the piercing, like reverse engineering the aftercare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that same size ring that you can put in 80% of the population's eyebrow is not going to work on that one person.
Mm-hmm.
They will need a larger ring.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can find the person that the smaller ring works better. Even smaller than what you would normally use, it fits perfect because of the way their skin is.
Right.
So there is no ideal solution as to how to approach every single piercing. But by somebody understanding what's happening during the healing process and how the jewelry affects the tissue, they know better what to put in and how.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it's more just their own concept of the aesthetics of how the piercing is going to look. So that you can actually teach somebody fairly quickly because it's just an understanding.
If they have an aptitude for
right.
it.
Right. Because I think somebody relying on notes mm-hmm. and going back through a textbook on how to do something doesn't work.
Right.
If you don't understand what you're doing, you shouldn't be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So teaching somebody that part is easy to do in 2 to 3 weeks. But it's the hands-on experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I'm training somebody, they're watching every piercing I'm doing when I'm in the studio. They're assisting. I send them in the back, show them how to scrub the tools, how to be careful, you know, showing them everything. But it's the real hands-on, right?
Right.
Because in any professional's career, there is a growth period that actually never stops.
Mm-hmm.
During those first few years of when you're learning is when you really need a mentor. You need somebody to stand over you, you know, to mm-hmm. sort of say, do it like this. Because who knows, you may have sat there and done 6 navels during the time that you were training.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden, as soon as you get back to where you're going to work, there comes that one navel that's a situation you don't know how to deal with.
Well, I think you've been piercing for well over 10 years now, and you know, every time I speak to you, even now, you know, you think you've learned everything there is to learn, but every time you've got a new set of ideas about piercing and you know, taking it one step closer to, you know, a really evolved
profession. You can always fine tune.
Mm-hmm.
Even look at like some of the really good tattoo artists out there. Look at Bill Baker. Look at the tattoos he did 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. He's been tattooing 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the tattoos he does today.
It's true.
Drastic difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the one person who he's not confident in himself.
Right.
That confidence kills, in my opinion. Right.
I think confidence lets a piercer stagnate.
Exactly. But plus also if you're confident, you're like, I can do that. No problem. And you don't worry about the potential problems that could happen. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, that's easy. Put it in and you're not concerning yourself with it. Mm-hmm. You're just doing it. You're mm-hmm. being a machine.
Yeah.
When the mechanics of piercing, yeah, that's easy to teach. I can teach a monkey how to do pierce a navel once it's already marked,
mm-hmm.
right? But it's where to put those marks and what jewelry to choose.
Right.
If something's handed to somebody, yes, it's easy to do, right? Anybody can learn that in a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is actually learning how to do it in a way that you're going to get the results that you want.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hard part, and that you only gain with experience.
Mm-hmm. Now, society is just sort of slowly starting to catch up with this. When you first opened your studio, there was, I mean, nothing in the way of legislation or even government interest in you know, what we're doing with all this. But recently, at least here in Canada and in most of the states and in Europe as well, legislation is finally starting to get put together, a lot of with the cooperation of various studios. What do you see going on here in Canada, and how is that affecting the various studios in
town?
Well,
there's pros and cons to both.
Mm-hmm.
One, the cons are the government really doesn't understand our industry.
Yeah.
So if you're asking a bunch of doctors and hairdressers and estheticians on how to do a piercing or a tattoo...
Well, I think it's important to note that, you know, the way that... what a doctor knows about healing... You know, has the intent.
He knows how to heal a wound.
Which is very, very different than healing a piercing.
Well, the dynamics of healing a piercing are totally different because you're forcing a wound to heal open,
mm-hmm.
not closed.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a cut, in 3 hours, it's already sealing up.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's happening underneath the skin. It doesn't come in contact with anything that touches it. But with a piercing, all of a sudden, you've got everything that touches your skin and gets down to the piercing is in full contact with it.
Mm-hmm.
Total different reactions start happening. And the products you think are going to actually be good for healing that you would use for a cut are actually disastrous on using it on a piercing.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people make the mistake as well of asking their doctor for advice and following their doctor's advice rather than their piercer's advice.
Well, I think the problem... Well...
Not that...
It's a bit of a back and forth.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, the doctors know in a certain area what's good and not, and they've got access to a lot of things. People who have a serious problem should go see a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But
these minor problems, you know, they're not in a doctor's field of expertise.
But if you walk into your doctor's office and you're allergic to the soap that you're using, he's going to look at it and think it's infected.
Mm-hmm.
His first reaction won't be allergy. Mm-hmm. Is it an allergy? Let's rule out that it's not an allergy, and then if we can't rule that out, then it's possibly an infection.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's like, it is an infection. Mm-hmm. Here you go. Take this.
Now, I don't want to get you in trouble for any sort of a Beatles-like, you know, bigger than Jesus egotism, but tell us the story about a great recommendation you got lately. Open up another beer, and it's a bit of a silly story, so I think it deserves another beer.
I had a lady walk into the studio the other day, very 50s looking, well, 50s age mom looking. She works up north, and you know that there was nothing really weird about her. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe she's thinking, oh, I want my nose pierced, which is sort of typical we're getting, you know, that 45-year-old woman that wants a little change. She wants her nose pierced, or, you know, she wants her ear cartilage done. And then she asked me for a hand web piercing. And looking at her, it's just one of the most oddest requests. I mean, we do get odd requests every now and then, pretty bizarre ones. And I thought, okay, I'll take her aside, sit her in the piercing room, and go over what it's going to take to actually heal a hand web piercing well. And the amount of time it's going to take and what you're going to have to go through, informing her that it's guaranteed to be infected at least 3 times during that healing time, just because it is hands. And so she, after discussing that with her, she decides, yes, she still wants to go through with it. Her reasoning is strong enough. And we choose the jewelry. We choose a gold barbell, because she really did not want a ring. So we go into the piercing room. Everything's ready. We do the piercing. And then as a side, she goes, do you know why I got this piercing done? And obviously I'm going to be very curious, because it was very out of character. And she's like, well, I just recently became a born-again Christian. And she's like, and this is my covenant with God. And I thought, well, that's kind of cool, because normally people like that would frown upon piercing and tattooing. So I thought that was kind of cool. And so we're talking a bit, and she's like, well, you know, I live far up north. I really don't know Toronto. So I said a little prayer and asked where I should go to get this piercing done. So, and she goes, and you came highly recommended.
All right. Well, I don't imagine you can get a better recommendation than that.
We're actually thinking of using it with our next advertising campaign.
Yeah.
The only studio in town that's recommended by God.
It certainly certainly beats a Now Magazine's Reader's Choice.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna play some Santana, and then we'll come back with an even sillier story. This next story is not appropriate for minors, so if you're under, let's say, 16, you should probably hit stop on your Real Audio player now. All right, so we'll get into this little bit more lewd story now. It must have been 4 years ago at Stainless's previous location just down the street. Older, maybe 40-year-old East Indian guy walks in, looking clearly, clearly stressed, needs to speak with Tom in private. What was going on there? What happened?
Well, first, I really didn't know. So we go into the piercing room, and we talk. And he was still a little worried about there, so we go up to the bathroom, where it's a lot more private. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going on here. And he says, I have a problem. I go, okay, what? Well, he pulls his pants down, and he had placed a finger ring over his penis.
And this is a normal size penis, so that
but
alone is a
feat.
Not
only that, but it was a very thin ring, just a cheap sort of ring you would find on the street. It wasn't like a thick band or anything, so it was pretty sharp at the edges. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I need some help. He had some reason placed it on because he had seen it in a dream. And then as he first became engorged,
he developed a priapism and
he could not get the blood flow back out. So that ring had been there constricting for about 3 days.
So it's a miracle he hadn't had a blood clot kill him off.
It's more of a miracle it didn't fall off. Miracle, I told him, look, if that stays on longer, you're going to have tissue death. Tissue's going to start dying because you're cutting off a lot of the oxygen to all the tissue there. So the biggest problem we
how do you get something like that off?
Well, the only thing we had, I didn't even have like a traditional ring cutter like a jeweler would have. So we had to use wire cutters to try to cut the band off. That was one of the most bizarre experiences.
But piercing studios are a good place to work if you enjoy bizarre experiences. Your share of regular callers, I'm sure. Do you do genital piercing?
Oh God, yeah. No, we've had our share of those ones, and the share of people that, well, I want to do a consultation to see if I can get something.
Do you have a female piercer?
Yeah.
So I think the question, I mean, I know we've talked about this a bit. The question that I get more than any other question on BME's sort of question of the day place is, how do I become a piercer? Where can I go to take a course? What can I do to become accredited? That whole set of questions. How do I turn this into a career? What advice would you have to these 16-year-old kids that are sort of hell-bent on, defying their parents and saying, I want to be a piercer?
One, it's not as glorious a job as you think it is. Half of the time you want to quit.
Yeah.
Half the time you just want to stop. You're sick and tired of those people that no matter how you tell them to take care of their piercing properly, their friends know better than you do. And they look after it that way, and then they come back and go, what the fuck did you do to my piercing? And yeah, it just, you get enough morons in one day and you want to quit. But then you get really nice people in, and then you realize, this is why I'm doing what I do. I mean, like, the biggest question I ever get once people look at the portfolio is, of all the weird stuff you've done, which piercings do you like doing the best? And my response always is, the ones on really nice people. Because that's what really I find as a profession. I find that's what really does it for you. It's more the social interaction that you have with the people. When you have somebody really nice that comes in, they listen to you, you're having a bit of a nice conversation, a nice interaction, you're doing the piercing for them, they come back, they bring their friends, and they're very grateful for what you did for them. I find those to be like the best piercings, right? So, if somebody wants to get into it, one, they have to really like people. They don't... It's not something...
So it's not that they should like piercing. It's that they should like people.
People. Definitely. It's a very people-oriented job. Two, you have to be able to think very fast You run yourself into situations where you do not have time to stop and think. You have to be able to act on the fly and properly.
Like what, for example?
Situations you're starting to do the piercing and the person sometimes may pass out when you're halfway through the piercing.
Mm-hmm.
What can you do?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have time to go, what am I supposed to do? You have to react immediately
mm-hmm.
when something happens, right? You may be doing a piercing and then for whatever reason somebody didn't tell you about a medication and you're getting intense bleeding
mm-hmm.
because they're on a really strong anti-inflammatory, right? What do you do? You know, you can't go running out of the room trying to find somebody to go, what's going on? What's going on? You got to act right away,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's a fun job. It's a very high-pressure job a lot of the time, too. Because the variety of people that you deal with, you never know what you're getting in the room with you,
mm-hmm.
right? So sometimes, you know, it's not the best situation. Like one time, I had an apprentice in, and we were doing a piercing. We do this guy's eyebrow, and you generally learn to tell right away when something's going wrong with somebody as far as fainting or anything goes. This guy does a little motion in the chair. So my reaction is, are you feeling okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's common for people to feel a little faint sometimes. Oh, no, I'm cool. You know, the guy's trying to be really tough. And he seems really agitated. And, you know, my philosophy is when the piercing's done, that person's not allowed to leave the room for at least 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You have to observe them because I've had people that seem perfectly fine. 8 minutes later, they just drop.
Well, you can't have them passing out on the street, certainly.
Well, imagine if they're crossing the street right and they pass out right in front of a streetcar.
Mm-hmm.
What's that going to do for the industry? That's not going to look good. Oh, they let me out really fast and I passed out right in front of a streetcar.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So my opinion is always hold the person for observation after the piercing's done, even the tattoo. Just to make sure that they are okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a piercing should not be snap, snap, snap.
So you think some of these studios in the busier areas that are having these real, you know, 8 minutes in and out the door, they're ticking time bombs.
How can you clean up your room? How can you prep? How can you go over aftercare with somebody properly, mark it properly, do the piercing, and observe that they're okay in 8 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
You can't. I mean, unless there's a lot happening right at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and you have multiple rooms that you switch between, and you have somebody doing all your prep for you, and just run, and then somebody else is dealing with the aftercare, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the situation.
Yeah.
Right? One, you're doing something that is actually very medical. Right? Take the time to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
Because the worst thing that's going to happen is, wow, you're going to get a really bad reputation because something really bad happened to somebody when they left your studio. Because they passed out on the street, they could have been crossing the street, you know. They could have passed out and somebody mugged them when they're unconscious. Does that look good on you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, plus, the more you show that you care for somebody, it looks only better on you, no matter what. Right? So, you have to like people.
Mm-hmm.
You deal with people puking every once in a while. You deal with people bleeding. You can't be, you know, you can't be squeamish.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You run into situations where you don't have time to think. You've just got to react. You've just got to do what you have to do.
Yeah.
And not sit there. And you don't have 5 minutes to try to figure out a plan. You've just got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really want to get in the industry, the best thing to do is get a job working counter first.
Yeah.
Because that way you're going to see a lot of things and you can really decide if that's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a high-risk job. You're dealing with body fluids every day. You're dealing with blood when you're cleaning your tools up.
Now, you didn't jump right into this out of high school. You had a career before this as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I trained as a fashion designer, and that's what I was going to do. But because I've got environmental allergies, I actually had to run away from the industry.
Mm-hmm. You think those allergies are part of what sort of maybe in the back of your head made you think more about materials and things like
exactly.
that?
Exactly. A lot... Because you learn from experience, I knew what my own experiences were like. So as soon as I started seeing certain problems, it looked like problems I'd already have.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I knew exactly what direction to point myself into to solve those problems for those people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd already experienced them.
Mm-hmm.
I could look at it and go, okay, that's happened to me.
Yeah. Do you think we're just about out of time here, according to both the clock and my bladder? Do you think that you sort of found your niche with stainless, or do you think, you know, in 10 years, 20 years, you'll be somewhere else?
I find my niche is applying myself.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as a niche goes, I am in my niche.
One of the things the last interview we did was with Blair, and one of the things that he said, and I think this is, you know, and all the, you know, the real upper crust of piercers, you know, they all say similar things. The real joy for them is the learning, and the, you know, always figuring out new things. And
oh, definitely, this is the one thing I really liked about the industry, because it was in such an infancy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like you're jumping into something that's very mature,
mm-hmm.
right? There was a lot of room to apply myself to what I am doing. Because when I started learning, I mean, I was, so, you know, I didn't have somebody physically teach me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'd, you know, I went and read the gauntlet how-tos and this and that and listened to what people said. Oh, they got pierced here. What did that person say? Talking to other people that pierced. And once I started building up the information in my head and started using it, I realized how much BS it was.
Yeah.
That it was just something somebody got to work once, so that's what they used every single time, and they did it that way every mm-hmm. single time.
Mm-hmm.
They had the best results with it, but they didn't know why. And to me, I was not happy with that as an answer. I wanted to know why it worked good. Well, because if you're doing anything, you want to always do the best you can. So by sitting there and applying myself a little bit to what I was doing, doing some research, finding out about healing,
mm-hmm.
and even just the fact that you could daily sit there and watch things happening, people come in with problems, you see what's happening. If you're starting, the benefit you have is, you know, if you get the people to come in, you can see the piercings you did, you can see the tattoos that you did. If you did something wrong, you can see it.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of studios don't even know they don't do anything wrong, because the way people may be treated, they have a problem, they're not willing to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right? So, you know, if you want to learn by liking people and showing that you actually care about them,
mm-hmm.
they're willing to come back if they have a problem.
Right.
And then you can rectify it. And as I've learned, most problems are so simple
mm-hmm.
that they're so easy to fix.
Right.
There's rarely do you get something that needs really strong intervention, because most of them are not infections. They're just irritations and allergies. And those things are solved mm-hmm. so easily.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we've literally filled up this mini disc. There's obviously a lot more to come. So hopefully, at some point in the future, we'll have Tom back for another interview. Again, if you haven't already checked it out, head on over to stainlessstudios.com, and we're going to finish off with some Bullring Brummies doing a cover of The Wizard. This is from the Nativity in Black Sabbath tribute album. Thank you.
again. Just keeps walking.